Welcome, everyone, back to the Midlife Hour Reacts, where we pause to reflect on life, love, memory, and everything in between. Today, we're stepping back in time into our most cherished and painful memories as we dissect Black Mirror Season 7, Episode 5, Eulogy. What if you could literally step inside a photograph, relive moments exactly as they happened, and perhaps change the way you remember your past? This episode follows Philip, beautifully brought to life by Paul Giamatti, as he revisits snapshots of a love once vibrant, now faded with time and regret. Written thoughtfully by Charlie Brooker, as all the episodes this season, and Ella Rode, and directed by Chris Barrett and Luke Taylor, Eulogy is a deeply introspective journey into grief, memory, and the human tendency to rewrite our own personal histories.
You're not supposed to arouse our listeners.
So, join us now as we unpack the truths hidden behind nostalgia, the power of memory, and the complex emotions that bind us all. This is Eulogy. Everybody, I'm DP Grizzly, back here with my best bud, Bob Arcadian.
And how are you guys doing? That boy, that BLB, bombs over Baghdad.
AKA once the most popular guy on MySpace.
Bob the Pirate. Look it up.
Bob the Pirate. And we're going to talk about episode 5. We thank you for joining us again as we've been going through this series of season 7 of Black Mirror. We finally come to Eulogy, what has been my favorite episode. Spoiler alert. I've been waiting to talk about this one. So, as we mentioned in the intro, Eulogy centers on Philip. He's a man who revisits old memories and photographs of his ex-girlfriend from years before, decades before, after he receives a little phone call from a person asking a bunch of weird questions, but telling him that someone has died. They initially give a bunch of names that he didn't know this person by until they land on the maiden name, and they advise that she's passed away and her service will be held in London. There's no explanation initially as to how he's related to this person and who this person is to him, but there is a somber expression that overtakes him when he finds out this news. He later on receives this little thing in the mail that talks about this company. What was it called again? It's called Eulogy, where this little artificial intelligence and this little device, as seen throughout season 7, attaches to your temple. It allows you to examine old photographs or memories and actually put yourself into that photograph or into that memory. And with the use of artificial intelligence and predictive reasoning or whatever, it can recreate those things even from angles that you may not be depicted in the picture, but that can be gathered from your memory as you recall things from your sense of smell, your observations, textile, touch and feels, or just pure emotion. And what's interesting about this entire endeavor, as is explained in the first photograph, is that he can't remember what his long lost love looked like.
Yeah, her name is Carol, and he can't remember what she looks like. I think the first photo is them at a house party, was it? On top of a rooftop?
Yep, a rooftop. They're living at some kind of commune, you know, for artists or people, those who call themselves artists. I think they said they were in Brooklyn. He's a musician. She's a cellist, right? She plays a cello. But just based off that first opening photograph, you can tell that he's infatuated with this individual, which begs the question as to why can't he recall what this individual looks like?
Infatuated with her, and her backstory is she has a boyfriend at home. And
fiance.
Fiance, correct. And he didn't know that at the time, as he's telling the AI assistant. He's just so intoxicated by what she was doing on that rooftop. She had just moved in and was very intrigued by what she was putting out there. So what happens next?
What happens next is he begins to become a little bit frustrated, right? Because he tells the little eulogy guide, whom he skips over their introduction, right? Because he's so uncomfortable with the idea of reliving these memories in the first place that he doesn't listen to the introduction. And he brings to them three photographs. The first photograph on the rooftop that we talked about. What was the second photograph?
Second photograph was, I think it was they revisit a hallway where he and Carol shared a romantic moment. Was that when he was
at the party, right? They weren't immediately in the foreground of the picture, but that's just prior to them going upstairs and sharing an intimate moment and the blossoming of this young relationship.
Love making, heartbreak control, taking human dim.
In the words of Katy Perry, he was feeling like a teenage dream.
Did they really go to space? We won't talk about that. We'll save that for the late night podcast. Katy Perry going to space. Fuck if I believe that.
Throughout this episode, you know, they talk about memory and regret. You know, the narrative delves into the human desire to revisit and potentially alter past experiences, or simply the narratives that we tell ourselves from our own perspective when we don't consider the perspective of others, right? And it's human nature to have that tendency. You think about an interaction you may have with a coworker, or someone tells you about a bad reaction they had with somebody in the parking lot at the grocery store. They're going to feed you that story only from their perspective without much consideration of the full story. You know, that old adage that there's three versions of every story, their version, your version, and then the truth somewhere in between, when you consider things from all angles. And also technology and grief, and how technology can almost be an aid in processing that grief, I would say, thematically throughout the entire course of the episode. And then authenticity of digital memories, right? It raises questions about the reliability of memory and the emotional impact on recollection of memories, especially over time. And I know that there's a lot of studies that talk about memory not being very reliable, as far as, like, you know, people who have to, like, testify in court and witnesses and things like that, how memory sometimes can deceive us, not intentionally. It's not people intentionally lying or creating these things, but our brain, as it's developed over tens of thousands of years, has developed these processes to fill in gaps to help us make sense of things, right?
Absolutely.
So even if you think about your own eyes and how we perceive things, how we perceive color, how we operate in a three-dimensional world, it's all perception. Our brain fills in gaps. We know that. It's visual tricks on us, right? Because we blink however many thousands of times a day, right? There's not black. We don't perceive the little black gaps or missing information. Our brain is...
You blink?
No. Well, I am human. Not all of us can star as R. Kelly in R. Kelly's famous homemade videotape.
When someone offers you a role of a lifetime, you know, you just say, I hear you calling. Here I come, baby.
You ask, how old is 17 really? When they offer you the role of a lifetime. What I loved about this episode, and I don't necessarily want to do this one in the same way that we've done the all of them. You've seen the episode. You've watched this stuff. Okay. You're here to hear us talk about our thoughts about it, not recant the entire episode. You know what happens. But just to hit the major plot points throughout the episode, it's slowly revealed that, you know, their relationship wasn't amicably ended. It ended on a bad terms, of which our main character, Philip, blames Carol wholeheartedly for, like, destroying his life, breaking his heart, tearing up the relationship, and doing this great disservice and offense to him as far as the relationship, when she took up an opportunity to play with an orchestra back in her home country of London after failing to get a place on the orchestra, the Philharmonic in Philadelphia. Anyway, that's the crux of their relationship ending, is that separation, that time apart. Her feeling that the woman that he worked with at the bar had a thing for him, it's kind of hitting on him, him not having her around, feeling that distance, the time difference, not being able to communicate. She's getting up when he's sleeping, the opposites. We all know what the time difference is between London and the United States. Of the two of us, you know more so than I, Bob, you being of Scottish ancestry there.
Most people call me a daywalker, like Blade, or a hybrid, not a daywalker. What did you say, biracial? What did you say?
I guess you're lucky you didn't get the red hair genes.
I kind of wish I did, though. I'd be like one of a kind out here. I've seen about three black dudes. Blake Griffin. Who else? That's it. That's all I've ever seen. Jason Momoa.
Isn't he a Pacific Islander?
That's what they want us to believe. And you date Lisa Bonet.
I love how you jumped to Blake Griffin. Speaking of which, it's Clippers. Who do you got? Bar.
Well, since they fired Mike Malone, I'm going to take the Clippers.
Okay. All right. Moving on. We don't want to get stuck. That's a different podcast. So while they're gone on his birthday, he receives a call from Carol, and he's been drinking heavily. And that girl from the bar, his coworker, is in his room. She answers the phone. Carol immediately accuses him of infidelity.
Women be trifling.
He kind of insinuates in the episode that's like he was unfaithful, but it's not explicitly stated. But in turn, Carol ends up having a one-night stand. But before figuring that out, they arrange for Philip to visit Carol in London on a long vacation after not seeing each other for a while. And on this trip, Philip plans to propose to his love, Carol.
But
and when he does so...
he acts like a child kind of the whole trip, doesn't he?
Oh, he kind of... I mean, throughout the episode, you can kind of tell that there's a lack of perspective or maturity, the way he speaks about the relationship, the fact that he burned out all the faces of all the images or crossed them out to such a degree that he, like,
fucking emo.
He literally can't remember what she looks like because he's destroyed every essence of her, or so we think, until the end. But when he proposes to her, she just walks out, and it frustrates him. And the only thing he can recall from that moment is the embarrassment that he felt, and what the AI guy that's guiding him throughout this entire episode, you know, increasingly throughout memory is questioning his recollection or his version of events. And
what would you call that? Main character syndrome for him? He has main character syndrome.
Yeah. Or just a lack of maturity, right? A lack of awareness, self-awareness, or there's a billion different things, but selfishness, immaturity, narcissism, the list goes on and on. We can kill ourselves.
Micropenis syndrome.
We can unalive ourselves with adjectives here.
I love the way you said that with a smile on your face, you sick bastard.
Hey, I'm just trying to follow the YouTube rules. Anyway, it turns out that this artificial intelligence guide that's been going through all these memories with him has been increasingly challenging his perspective or his version of events. And it all culminates at the restaurant where he proposed to Carol, and she just didn't say anything and left. And he mentioned that he went back to his hotel and had never heard from her again from that day, and didn't even think about her name or anything until he got the notification that she had passed away. Well, it turns out that artificial intelligence is based off Carol's daughter. Carol's daughter that she had with a one-night stand, she was pregnant when he proposed to her at that dinner, and she didn't know how to talk about it. What was she supposed to do? Was she supposed to accept his offer of marriage, but then explain post-acceptance that she too had been unfaithful and that there was a child that she wanted to keep it? Then he would have really painted her as a villain versus accepting his role in the conflict that they had. But it all gets lost in translation, right? Because she did leave him a letter explaining all those things, but he never found it because, like the little bitch he was, he went back to his hotel room and smashed everything up and lost it in the mess.
I'm a rock star. Avril Lavigne.
But the episode, I think, ends beautifully because earlier in the episode, he talks, there's a photograph of him leaning on the door frame of her room at the co-op that they're living at. And he's watching her record a piece, play an original piece of music, but he can't recall what the music sounds like. The AI inquires, because it's based off of like an image or a version of a download of the daughter that's meant to filter out through these things without exposing the daughter to all the trauma of everyone's memories, right? It's selective memories for this eulogy, but it culminates when he pulls out a cassette tape of that recording and he can finally remember her face after reading the letter that she did leave him when he proposed that explained everything. And it's almost tragic, right? Like, what could have been? Maybe the daughter could have had a surrogate father because her biological father was never in her life, with the exception of the four times that she mentioned.
And as self-deprecating as he was, I don't think he would have raised her. I think he would, poor me, bleh, and then he would have fucking ran off.
I'm not going to say that's how he would have reacted, but that's a version that is possible and maybe even probable. These two individuals are brought together because of their love for one individual, right? Carol. Carol is now gone, and they're only being introduced to each other because of that shared connection. And through this shared connection, Philip, although a tortured, lonely soul, some by his own doing, right, is able to provide some closure to the daughter through this process, by being able to provide her with that original piece of music because she had learned to play the cello from her mother. And the episode ends with him attending the funeral in London, walking in, everybody's doing the whole digital eulogy thing, and the daughter is playing her mother's original piece of music, and there's like a shared connection there. So I thought it was a beautiful episode, a little touch on humanity, and maybe shines a light on some of the good that technology maybe can do, because everyone likes to hold on to the best memories they have. How often do you hear people as they age talk about how they didn't realize when they were younger, but it was the best times they would ever have in their life, and they wish they would have cherished it more? Well, in this universe, eulogy offers you an opportunity to cherish those memories, or to revisit them. Now, we could talk ad nauseum about how detrimental that could be to people's psyches, right? Not being able to move past the past and enjoy the present, if such technology did exist, because I could see that being detrimental to people too. People just like consuming themselves in what was and not being able to overcome that to be who they are or what they can be, and to fulfilling who they are.
They have a small piece of technology now you can put on your headstone when you die, that if you press play, it'll, you know, put like videos in there that's supposed to be weather resistant and like photos throughout your life. So instead of reading just a tombstone, now you can see like memories of someone's life if you're just a random visitor. So that's kind of cool. It's not to the full extent of Black Mirror with the whole VR to the side of the temple and you're sitting there in the church looking like a walking dead zombie.
Yeah, they kind of do that with like the websites they do now, where people can post images or videos or comments on a website when people pass away and they have online eulogies. But listen, like, the Zune was a thing, right? And it was the next hottest thing, you know, 10 years ago. I know some of you fools thought you were 10 cool.
10 years ago, talk about 25.
You didn't buy an iPod back in the 20s because you're too cool and you got a Zune. You thought it was going to be the next big thing, and that shit went out of business. They stopped supporting it and you got stuck with a useless piece of hardware. Joke's on you. Capitalism wins.
Apple. Remember that shit?
Was that the one that sold the little?
Yes. 25 seconds worth of song.
you sucker. You sucker.
I had a hit clip. But regardless, I think, oh shit.
Anyway. As I said in the beginning, this was probably my favorite episode. Call me a softie. Call me a, you know, an old school emo kid, you know, from the early 2000s. But
and he is, everybody. He definitely is. What would you rate it? What's your rating on this one? Let me guess your rating. I'm going to say you're going to give it a 9.5.
Whoa, that's exactly what I was going to give it. 9.5. You knocked it out of the park.
Damn right. I'll give it a 9.5 as well. It was my second favorite episode of the season. Next episode was my favorite.
And there's only one episode left. And that one's going to be a banger. And for that, we appreciate you, Netflix and Black Mirror. But we appreciate you guys joining us. Leave your thoughts, comments below. Hit the subscribe bell notification. You know, we're not real YouTubers. We're just doing this to hang out and thought we'd record it because people might want to join in. But yeah, it'll keep us motivated to keep posting. Thanks for tuning in.
Absolutely will.
It's been real. Yeah.
Stay black and I'll sub up. You're making me blush. I'll sub up. You know I like you so much. I'll sub up. All I wanna know is, can I eat a sub?